Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Tet, Chapter 19. In yesterday's perek, we learned that while Shaul became more and more suspicious of David, to the point of devising covert strategies to have David killed, his children did not share his feelings. Just the opposite. Both Yehonatan and Michal expressed deep love for David, Yehonatan perhaps recognizing in him a kindred spirit, sharing his deep faith in Hashem and profound courage and determination to fight the enemies of Hashem. While the deep bond between David and Yehonatan was mutual, it's less clear that Michal's love for David was reciprocated. Ralbag maintains that David saw the marriage as a means of cementing his claim to the kingship. Today's perek marks a further decline in the relationship between Shaul and David, with Shaul transitioning from concealed to open hostility toward David, while his children persist in championing David's cause. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayidaber Shaul el Yonatan beno ve'el kol avadav lehamit et David, v'Yonatan ben Shaul chafetz b'David me'od. Shaul spoke to Yonatan and his servants about killing David. The commentators explain that Shaul spoke to them about devising a way to kill David such that it would appear to be an accident. But Yonatan, the son of Shaul, supported David. He told David that his father wants to kill him, and he cautioned him to be on his guard. Yonatan instructed David to hide in the field, where he would arrange to have a conversation with his father that David would be able to overhear, to prove the truth of what he was saying. The implication is that David perhaps was reluctant to believe that Shaul would actually try to kill him, and Yehonatan wanted him to hear it firsthand. Many commentators suggest that Yehonatan arranged for this to take place in the field because it was customary for Shaul and Yehonatan to walk together in the mornings, while Malbim offers the opinion that it was so that David could make a quick escape. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vayidaber Yehonatan b'David tov el Shaul aviv, vayomer elav, Al yechata hamelech be'avdo b'David, ki lo chata lach, v'chi ma'asav tov lach me'od, tov lach me'od. With David positioned so as to overhear, Yehonatan spoke well of David to Shaul, saying, "Let the king not act sinfully with regard to his servant David, for David has done nothing to harm you. In fact, he's done you a great deal of good. He risked his life to defeat the Plishti, and Hashem granted him a great salvation for all of Israel, which you witnessed and rejoiced at. Why would you spill innocent blood, killing David for no reason?" And Shaul listened to Yehonatan and swore that David would not die. Note that in the first pasuk, when Shaul addresses Yehonatan expressing his desire to kill David, he's called Yehonatan without the hey, while every time his name is mentioned in support of David, he's called Yehonatan with the hey of Hashem's name added to his name. Abarbanel explains that Shaul readily agrees to Yehonatan's plea, either in earnest, because when he's not overpowered by the Ruach Ra'ah, the evil spirit, he does still care for David, or alternatively because he is suspicious of Yehonatan, whose support for David was no secret and he was trying to mislead him. At this point, a further battle took place with the Plishtim, and again, David distinguished himself, defeating the Plishtim and causing them to flee. Pasuk Tet, verse 9, Vatihi Ruach Hashem Ra'a el Shaul, Vihu Beveto Yoshev, Vechanito Biyado, VeDavid Minagein Biyad. The Ruach Ra'a, the evil spirit from Hashem, once again came upon Shaul, and he was sitting in his home with his spear in his hand, while David played for him using his hand. Kliyakar explains the word biyado, with his hand, which seems extraneous. Obviously, David is playing the instrument with his hand, but here he says it's added to imply that David was playing mechanically, using only his hand, rather than engaging his mind, but sensing danger from Shaul. So he's focused on the danger that he faced in Shaul's presence, rather than on the musical instrument. Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Vayivakesh Shaul lehakot bechanit bedavid uvakir, Vayiftar mipnei Shaul vayachet hachanit bakir, vedavid nas, vayimaleit balayla hahu. And Shaul attempted to strike David with his spear, to pin him to the wall. And Shaul thrust his spear, but struck the wall. and David escaped to his own home. Unlike the first time Shaul tried to kill David with his spear, when it might have looked like an accident, this attempt was so clearly deliberate that David barely escaped with his life. Nevertheless, Shaul can claim now that David ran away from the king's service, which gives him an overt excuse to have David killed as one who rebelled against the king, Morid b'Malchut. Vayishlach Shaul malachim el beit David lishomro ulhamito baboker. ותגד לדוד מיכל אשתו לאמור, אם אינך ממלאת את נפשך הלילה, מחר אתה מומת. Shaul sent messengers to guard David's house, with instructions to kill him when he leaves the house in the morning. Michal, his wife, told David that if he does not escape that very night, tomorrow he would be dead. Michal lowered David out the window, presumably at the side or the back of the house, while the messengers were guarding the front gate, and he escaped. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vatikach Michal et ha-trafim, Vatasem el hamita, Ve'et kvir ha'izim sama mrashotav, Vatichas babaged. Michal took the trafim and placed them in David's bed with a hairy goatskin at its head and covered it with a blanket, making it appear that someone was sleeping in the bed. And when Shaul sent his soldiers in the morning, she said that David was sick. Shaul was so persistent in his determination to kill David that he instructed the messengers to bring David to him in his bed to be killed. And when the messengers came into the house, they discovered the trafim in the bed with the goatskin at its head. So let's just pause for a moment to discuss the meaning of the term trafim. The word appears only a handful of times in Tanakh, perhaps most famously in connection with Rachel Imenu, when Yaakov and his family were leaving the house of Lavan, his father-in-law, and Rachel stole her father's trafim. And there, the commentators are almost unanimous in translating trafim as idols, with Rachel stealing her father's idols as a means of separating him from his Avodah Zarah. In other cases as well, it's clear from the context that these are tools associated with idolatry, which presents us with a pretty significant question. Why would David and Michal have had idols in their home? According to Abarbanel and Mitzudat Zion, these trafim were kinds of mannequins that the women made to look like their husbands, like dummies, so that when they went out to war, they could gaze lovingly at their husband's image. Now, that may sound a little bit odd to us, but it's not really so unlike somebody looking at a photo album today. That's what they had, and you know, they didn't have a photograph, so they made an image of their husbands so that they could just have that object of love to keep their husband's memory fresh in their minds, even when they're far away. Kli Yakar cites a view that the trafim were somehow used to tell time, and David was so mindful of accounting for his time and using it in the service of Hashem that Michal used specifically that object to create a lump in the bed. So it's not actually an image or a mannequin, but it is some sort of tool that might have just created that sort of lump shape. The reason that she used specifically that was that so that David's merits would stand him in good stead as he tried to escape. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayomer Shaul el Michal, Lama kacha rimitani? Vatishalchi et oivi, Vayimalit, Vatomer Michal el Shaul, Hu amari lai shalcheni, Lama amitech? Shaul said to Michal, Why have you tricked me so, and sent my enemy away that he might escape? And Michal said to Shaul, He demanded that I let him go, or threatened to kill me. According to Rashi, Michal was blaming her father for marrying her off to this potentially violent man. Da'at Sofrim adds that this had the unfortunate effect of adding fuel to the fire of Shaul's suspicion of David as one who threatened the future of his family. Meanwhile, Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18, V'David barach v'yimalit v'yavo el Shmuel haramata v'yaged lo et kol asher asa lo Shaul v'yelech hu u'Shmuel v'yeshvu b'nayot. David ran away and escaped, and he came to Shmuel in Ramah and told him everything that Shaul had done to him, and he and Shmuel went and stayed at Nayot. Abarbanel explains that David went to Shmuel because as the prophet who had anointed both Shaul and himself, it was his role to relate to them the will of Hashem. David viewed everything that was happening to him as divinely ordained, and he wanted prophetic advice about what to do in order to save his life. Da'at Sofrim explains Shmuel's apparent lack of response by saying that Shmuel knew that it was pointless to try to influence Shaul, and that in any event, his days were numbered. Moreover, there was a positive value to David's suffering. It was like a purifying furnace, which he would channel into beautiful psalms expressing his deeply felt emunah and bitachon, which would accompany the Jewish people in our suffering throughout history. Where is Nayot? Radak offers three suggestions. One, it was a place where the student prophets gathered to study with Shmuel. He doesn't tell us where that place might be, but it was the name of such a place. Or it was, as the Targum, the Aramaic translation, suggests, a Beit Ulpina, a house of study. Or as Chazal teach, it was a topic rather than a place. David and Shmuel remained in Shmuel's home in Ramah, but were transported by their studies regarding Noyo Shel Olam, the ornament of the world, the Beit HaMikdash, discussing where the temple would be located. It was told to Shaul that David was in Nayot at Ramah, and Shaul sent messengers to retrieve David. But when the band of messengers saw the prophets prophesying and Shmuel standing over them, the spirit of Hashem came upon the messengers, and they too began to prophesy. When Shaul was told of this, he sent another group of messengers, and the same thing happened, a second and then a third time. Finally, Shaul himself went to Ramah, and when he reached the cistern in Sechu, he asked, "Where are Shmuel and David?" And he was told that they were in Nayot at Ramah. Note that in Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18, the text puts David before Shmuel, Vayelech hu u'Shmuel, since the king precedes the Navi. But while Shaul speaks of them, he gives precedence to Shmuel over David. Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23, Vayelech sham el Nayot barama, Vatihi alav gam hu ruach Elokim, Vayelech haloch vayitnabe ad bo'o b'Nayot barama. So Shaul went there to Nayot at Ramah, and the spirit of Hashem came upon him as well. And he went along prophesying until he came to Nayot at Ramah. Pasuk Chaf Dalet Vayafshet gam hu b'gadav, Vayitnabe gam hu lifnei Shmuel, Vayipol arom kol hayom hahu v'chol halayla, al kein yomru, hagam Shaul banviim? And Shaul removed his clothing, and he too prophesied before Shmuel. And he fell to the ground unclothed all that day and night. And the people said, hagam Shmuel banviim? Is Shaul too among the prophets? Mishpitzot Zahav cites three explanations for this idea of Shaul removing his clothing. First, he removed his royal garments so as to resemble the student prophets and not be glorified above them. This is the approach that's adopted by Rashi and Rabbeinu Yeshaya Mitrani. A second possibility, in the name of the Netziv, he explains that Shaul removed the veils of gashmiut, of physicality, that stand in the way of complete dveikut, complete devotion to Hashem. So Shaul ascended great spiritual heights in those moments. Thirdly, he cites the Minchat Eliezer of Munkach, who taught that Shaul's defining quality was his personal modesty and the fact that he hid his own greatness. Thus, when the spirit of prophecy descended upon him, he was stripped of all the coverings that hid his devotion to Hashem, and everyone could see his spiritual greatness. Shaul fell to the ground in the manner of many prophets who achieve prophecy and are overwhelmed by its power. This is testimony to the prophetic power of Shmuel, who is described in verse 20 as Omed Nitzav Alehim, standing firmly above the student prophets. Shmuel alone was able to master his physical state while experiencing powerful prophecy. The people echoed the phrase Hagam Shaul Banviim that they had expressed at the outset of Shaul's kingship, when he prophesied in accordance with the signs given to him by Shmuel. And he was transformed from this private, introspective, humble individual to public servant. It's somewhat ironic that while the original episode was emblematic of the rise of Shaul to new heights, here his prophetic experience is clearly a form of subservience to Shmuel, whose teachings he had rejected and who now exerted his influence to manipulate conditions that would allow David to escape Shaul's notice and run away to safety. Thank you for learning together. Li'ilui nishmot imhotenu haikarot, Esther Oppenheimer, Aleha Shalom, and Sarah Schenker, Aleha Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.